You know, since Davos, stock markets have moved higher, and there's a sort of feeling of optimism around the place. And it's not hard to see why that optimism is there. So I'm going to run you through the things that make people optimistic, and they certainly made them optimistic in Davos. And then we'll start to talk about some of the very interesting things that are happening that may turn out to be very good or may turn out to be very bad. We start with the United States. The United States economy is going to slow, but it's still growing at a very good set of growth numbers. There's still strong growth and strong productivity amongst their companies. Japan, after all those years of in the doldrums, is starting to really take off. Could get up to 2.9% growth, some of the commentators are saying. Germany, disaster area. You're starting to see seeds of growth there. The Russians, of course, with their oil money, are spending money buying German capital goods. Merkel was in Davos, the new Chancellor, Angela Merkel, and she's getting the cost down, the productivity starting to move. Initially, that's going to be at the expense of the laggards, Italy and France, but they too will, if Germany continues to get its act together, they too will have to go along the similar way. Latin America, certainly Brazil looks a bit better than it used to do. China is slowing, and I'll talk about it later, but it's still very strong, say from 10% growth or 8% growth. Asia is strong. Here in Australia, we're sort of two economies. We're slowing a bit, but on the eastern seaboard, particularly in New South Wales, it's tougher. Not hard to see why. The Sydney economy has been affected because vast areas of their housing market have fallen 20%. Lots of people who bought dwellings on negative gearing in 2002, 2003 are underwater. And overall, people say, oh, it's only down 8%, but in the key areas, it's down 20%. And so that's why, and that depresses the place. And so you've got consumer spending, and that slows that part of the economy down. We haven't been affected as much. We didn't. Our house prices here stabilised. They did fall, but nothing to that extent, and they've certainly stabilised now. There were some suggestions that the New South Wales housing market might have bottomed, but that's yet to be seen. Productivity, I'll talk about it later. Productivity is going to rise, not fall. And there are a series of things taking place which will increase productivity of corporations, and that, of course, is one of the factors driving our share markets. I've now started a series in The Australian where I comment each Saturday on the outlook for leading Australian companies in 2010. And I've done four of them so far, and it's quite remarkable. AMP, Computershare, CSL, AXA, do Brambles after that. And our leading companies are really looking to improve themselves quite dramatically, and that's one of the things that is underpinning our share market. Now, I want to talk that's the base. Now I want to talk to you about some of the specific things that are taking place. When I was in Davos, I went to a dinner, and it was a Middle Eastern dinner. And I found myself talking to three members of the Iraqi parliament. They were all long names, I won't worry them. But one was a Sunni, one was a Shiite, and one was a Kurd. And at that time, this is before the bombing of the mosque, of course, they were optimistic that they could get a government of national unity. They said, oh, it's much easier to talk here than it is back in Baghdad. And they obviously haven't done that. But I just bring two things to your attention which surprise me. The first is that a Sunni guy said to me, look, the Americans made one really big mistake. When they got to power, and they got there, they sacked all the soldiers, the Iraqi soldiers. And those soldiers went back to their homes with no money. no way of keeping their families alive. There was only one business they knew, and that was the soldiering business. And the anti-American forces, whatever they might be, paid those soldiers $200 US a bomb. And that led an enormous amount of the attack on the Americans. They're now recruiting those soldiers back into the force. And you'll see articles from time to time about Al-Qaeda on the run and people saying that we're getting the upper hand. That's part of that process. Now, it's only part of it. It's a lot more complex than that. But the Sunni guy also said to me something which underpins the importance of Iraq. And he said, if we could get this place under control, and quote your odds on it, then in 2 or 3 years, with the expenditure of $30 to $40 billion, we can produce more than half of the current output of Saudi Arabia in oil. This is a huge... The oil is there. The production facilities are old and decrepit. They have to be updated. But whoever gets control of Iraq is going to control a huge slab of the world oil market. And so this is a much bigger play. If Iran gets control of the market of Iraq in some way, shape or form, it controls then both Iran and Iraq oil. Understand the significance of that. Now, let's talk about the oil price. I think we've learned something in the last, say, 3 or 4 months. As oil kept rising, it didn't affect the economies. When it was 30, it went to 40, we said it's a disaster. No, it wasn't. 50 will be a disaster. No, it wasn't. 60 a disaster. No, it wasn't. But when it got to 70, things started to happen around the globe. $70 a barrel. Here in Australia, coke sales started to fall. The toll road had not shown a blip anywhere. I'm thinking about kept going. But there were little blips when it got to 70. So I think we know that 70 and above is where the thing starts to trigger problems. Now, there's a lot of oil. At $60 a barrel, there's a lot of money to be made in oil. Normally the big oil companies would be out there putting big facilities in and things like that. The problem is, for your Essos and your Shells and your BPs, that yes, they're putting money into Nigeria, and you can see the difficulties there, but a lot of the places, the oil is in very dangerous, politically dangerous places, or places where the oil companies can't go, like Russia. And so the facilities aren't being put in quite the way that you would normally have expected. But we had Richard Branson saying, look, I'm going to put ethanol plants around the world. At $60 a barrel, I make a fortune on ethanol. And so have no doubt that in time that oil will be generated at 60, let alone 70. But that's time in the future. Very important in the oil market and the copper market are the hedge funds. These hedge funds control about $1 trillion of money, and they are huge players in these risk situations. And so that does accentuate the ups and the downs. And that leads me to the US deficit. Because this time last year we said, well, that US deficit is getting very big. The Chinese are not happy about it. You'll might remember, I've been saying this on a number of occasions, that when you talk to the Americans in New York, they say, don't ever worry about the US deficit. Don't even think about worrying about it, because we've got the Asians trapped. They've got to keep lending us the money or we won't buy their goods. And in 2005 and 2004 and any of those years, that was proved in spades. The Asians came good with the money, and no doubt about it, they put it up. And I don't think there's probably going to be a problem in 2006. But just be aware of a change, a very, very significant change. And that is that the Asians are pumping a lot of their money in a different direction. It's going to the oil producers. And they now have to put up the cash to keep the Americans alive, keep those American consumers spending. Now, they put up the cash, they don't lend it to America, they put it in European banks, and sometimes we're paying debt. But it goes off to the Americans. At this stage, let's name the three countries that we're talking about, so we know who it is that the Americans are going to depend on. Saudi, Russia, Iran. They're the countries that are going to keep America afloat. And just as a little aside, Joe, the Americans said we don't want the Emirates buying our ports. You know, if you're depending on somebody giving you a whole lot of money, lending it to you, it's not usually a good idea to do things like that. Who knows? The Americans might be right. The Arabs will be just trapped the same way as the Asians. Not the same thing, though. I don't know where they're going to put the money. The Europeans can't handle it. They'll send it off to the US. So just be aware and follow it. But you can see some rumblings in the Middle Eastern community as they start to discover what they're actually doing. Like Iran saying, well, hang on, do you realise we're funding US in Iraq? Yeah. Very interesting. So that's something to watch. In Davos, China announced their 5-year plan, setting out what they're going to do over the next 5 years. It was significant and very important. At the same time, and totally different to the last 5 years. At the same time, the banks, in Chinese banks in Davos, explained what they're doing. And the two things are obviously related, as you'd expect. The past 5-year plan was get those plants in, get that export market going, employ as many people as we can on the East Coast, and go for it. And that's exactly what they did, and you know the story. The next 5-year plan is quite different. It's about health. It's about water and the environment. It's about energy with hydro. We talked about this last year, hydro, nuclear, and better coal burning. It's about developing jobs in Western China. It's about hybrid cars. A very different sort of housing, it's about education, it's about improving the lot of the people in China, not necessarily by putting a whole lot of new factories up. That doesn't mean they won't go up. And the banks in China said, oh, you know, we had a sort of lending system before where the local branch manager would get drunk with the factory owner and the next day he'd get his loan. And we're now centralising the whole process. And guess who they thought were the villains? Who had been getting more bank managers drunk than anybody else and getting huge loans as a result? If you've read The Australian, you know the story. It's the steel makers. It's the steel makers. And we've got a huge excess of capacity coming on steel. And the banks have got are worried about this. That's why the iron ore price will do well to stay as it is, because maybe the guys will push hard and get it higher, I don't know, but they're going to clamp on those Chinese steelmakers. Paul Skinner from RTZ was there, and he wasn't at the session that where the banks talked about the steelmakers. In fact, he was in a different place, but he heard about the iron ore and the change. But then the Indians expect, what we're planning to do is to use our iron ore. We're not going to be a long-term exporter. We're going to put steel plants up, and we're going to use it internally to generate as many jobs as we can. And that was good news for RTZ and Australian Iron Ore. I must say the thing that excited Paul Skinner most in Davos was the cable he got as part of the RTZ interim report, saying they'd done a joint venture to explore for nickel in Russia. And Russia is very important in the development of minerals and oil in the future. It's not been properly explored. This morning, you saw that Maya was taken over by a private equity fund. Private equity funds are now at a stage where they can take over a $15 billion company. Enormous capital power in private equity. And why are people going to sell out the private equities? That was a subsidiary company that sold out. But often they're big public companies now that are going to private equity firms. And it's quite simple. The current public company arena means incredible governance exercises, very, very short term. You can't do a 3-year plan. And companies are saying, it's not for us. And that private equity, who, by the way, are mustering the money from the institutions who are demanding the short-term performance. They're investing in the long term via private equity. And so Amaya will get the chance to do the things it needs to do and won't always have to produce every 6 months enough profits for its survival for Coles Myer. Now, whether they do the right things and get it right is another subject. And whether a Woolworths person is the person to run a an upmarket Myer is another subject of some we'll determine that later. But the exercise will be a much more long-term focused situation. And, of course, we talked about the hedge funds earlier. They're out there punting. Somewhere along the line, some of those guys are getting into trouble. And that's $1 trillion out there. And they're all out there taking risks. $40 billion worth of management fees paid each year. $40 billion management fees. Huge fees. That's where all the skills are going. That's where the money is. I want to finish by alerting you to three things. When you look at the markets in the morning, of course you'll look at the Dow and the S&P and things like that. But I want you to focus on one figure. Keep watching it. And that is the US long-term bond rate. Because if you're looking for things that can go wrong, sure, we've talked about oil and Iraq and deficits and stuff like that. But in the last, the US housing market is governed by the US, the lending to it is related to the US bond market, the long-term market. And the interest rates on US long-term bonds until recently have not been rising. So US house prices have risen. So therefore US consumers have borrowed on their houses to consume or felt great about the whole exercise and also consumed. And very much that US consumer movement has been driven by the low long-term bond price because its effect on houses, housing rates and housing prices. It's now down 4.4%. It's up 4.75%. And rising. So watch that figure, because that could affect US consumers. I don't suppose up to 4.7 will have a huge effect. But put a 5 in front of it, and it will affect new buyers of homes and the value of homes. The bulls in the market say, look, the US is going to have a soft landing in its housing market, the same as Australia, the same as the UK. Don't worry about it. And that's probably right. But just watch that figure. It's very significant. And finally, productivity. I just emphasise two things to you. Firstly, the internet phone is going to be terribly important. It's sort of a gizmo at present, and it's going to be a gizmo for a little while. But what's going to happen to you and to me and to your businesses is that you will have a broadband subscription, and that broadband subscription will handle your landline. You won't have a separate landline, and you'll have a quite totally mobile phone. And then later, your mobile phone case covered by the broadband as well, and also the video, because the broadband becomes your data, your voice, and your video. Now, that doesn't happen straight away, but it's unveiling. eBay put a value, I might have the figure wrong, but $4 billion on Skype, and they're going to link it together. It changes the businesses, because once you've got free communication, free in inverted commas, because you have to pay for your broadband, but your actual variable communication is free, the same as the net. Like, you subscribe to your broadband, but as long as you've got enough pipe there, there's no extra marginal cost. It changes the nature of health, education, and a lot of interactions with consumers. And you'll see that transformation. It makes interaction much more economic, and it will increase the productivity of businesses. Superimpose that onto the retail level, and I've talked about this in previous discussions, but it's now happening. Home Depot announced while we're in Davos that they're going to eliminate the checkout person, and that's done quite simply by putting radio tags on all the products, so that you get the at the end you just put your trolley through the scanner, or the trolley might even say what your total is as you're going along, and of course the checkout people don't have to be sacked. No, they become even more important. Right now, the store only knows who you are when you leave. They've got to find out who you are when they come in, so that when you walk past the counter, that it's just you, because they want to know who you are, there'll be a special come up on your trolley and affecting you. Not your spouse, you. And the spouse have a different special. So, and that comes through into our retailers in due course. You've got to get the price of the actual unit cost of the radio chip. It's got to come down so you can put it onto soap powder and things like that. But it's good enough for Home Depot, which is Bunnings in the US, is equivalent of Bunnings. And so those changes. Plus a whole myriad of changes that come with technology. Those of you who are going to have infrastructure and power, they're developing a new ink. A new ink. And you put this ink on, it's a silicon ink, and you put it on steel. And you've got a silicon, a solar panel for 5% of the current costs. You can turn your house into a proper powerhouse, if you like, at a much lower cost than you do now. These are sort of things in medicine and in environment that are being developed all over the place. And it's that sort of excitement, plus the mergers we're seeing, taking advantage of these sort of productivity opportunities, that makes our business community a very exciting place. Thank you.